This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.
Recollections Radio, Monday morning tea time is now all about sharing memories with you, old and new, of life in Dunedin.
Bringing you stories, interviews and music from times past and inviting you to share your memories with us.
Presented by Jill Bowie and Kay Mercer, the team behind Dunedin Public Library's Scattered Seeds Archive, thanks to generous funding by the New Zealand Libraries Partnership Project.
Recollections Radio, Monday mornings at 11 on 105.4 FM and 1575 AM.
Kia ora.
Good morning.
Welcome to the show on this, well, phenomenal, unprecedented, but it's a one-off. We've got a special day off today in memorial of the Queen, Queen Elizabeth II, who sadly passed away. And we're celebrating
the Queen today.
Yeah, we're talking all Queen stuff.
Yeah, we'll remember her.
Yes, but we'll try not to get too sad. You know, she was...
She lived a long life.
She did a long and very full life, much loved, and really that's the best you can ask for, isn't it? To be so well loved by people.
The nicest thing that we've sort of seen is just that outpouring of genuine love for her.
Millions of people. Yeah. So without further ado, I think we'll crack on and try and lift the mood slightly.
Exactly.
I'm going to start off with some royal etiquette rules, which I've always found a bit bizarre. But, you know, that's royalty for you. So we've got a king now. So when the king stands up, you immediately have to stand as well. Can't be sitting down with the king's there. It is a grave breach of protocol to remain sitting while the king stands. So when he pops by the library next, we'll make sure we're standing up.
Got it sorted.
Yep. When the king has finished eating, like I'm expecting to eat with the king at some point, you have finished eating. So... you know, you don't eat while the king's not eating. But the king really should follow protocol, and he makes sure all his guests have finished eating before he lays down his knife and fork.
True.
So it's a two-way street there. Here's another one. Children in the royal family are expected to bow and curtsy to the king from around the age of 5.
That's quite disciplined, isn't it?
You don't bow to another HRH. You only bow to the king when you're seeing him for the first time. So if the king adopts me, I will be bowing and scraping. Men give a short bow from the neck and women curtsy. And I have been practising my curtsies, and I'll be doing that shortly. I don't know if you can see me, but I'm doing a very nice bob just now. Here's another one. All royal brides are expected to include myrtle in their wedding bouquets. And that's because Queen Victoria's daughter, Princess Victoria, started the tradition on her own wedding day in 1858. Royal brides who've incorporated myrtle in their bouquets include Kate Middleton, Meghan Markle, Princess Eugenie, Princess Beatrice, and Queen Elizabeth II herself all those years ago.
I guess that's a good, you know, a good signal.
It is. So if you're wanting to feel a bit like royalty when you get married, stick a bit of myrtle in your bouquet. At dinner parties, the king will speak first to the person seated on his right during the first course, and then he switches to a conversation with the person on his left during the second course. It's all very regimented, isn't it? So if someone says something interesting, he's got to bite his tongue and wait for the second course. It's very hard being a king. And when royals travel abroad, this is very sad, they are required to pack an all-black outfit in case a sudden death in the family means they immediately have to enter a period of mourning. Imagine doing that.
You're off to
Ibiza with your swimming costumes and your 20 pairs of shoes, and you have to pack a mourning outfit as well.
Gosh.
Crack, it's hard being royal.
It is, isn't it? Mm. Yeah. It's not easy.
No, a few more of these. According to protocol, women must wear hats to formal royal occasions. I wear a hat all the time. All the time, just in case. So, you know.
You'll pack that in your bag
too. I do pack that. Women are not required to wear hats to formal occasions after 6, however. 6 p.m. After 6 p.m, hats are out and tiaras are in. So you must put your tiara in your suitcase as well.
I much prefer a tiara, quite frankly.
Oh, me too, but not for breakfast, of course. Tiaras are exclusively reserved for married members of the royal family or royal brides, so I'm okay.
Oh, I didn't realise that.
But you're going to have to get married.
Yeah.
Never, ever turn your back on the king. And I'm not sure if that's because he's liable to push you in the swimming pool or because you just don't do
it's
that.
It's bad.
So, yeah, anyway. So that's the royal etiquette. So just in case the king visits, well, he apparently is going to visit New Zealand, you will know what to do. Here you go.
And
over to you.
Speaking of royal visits, so Ada Fash was the city librarian from 1960 to 68.
She was.
She had a very good collection that she gave to the library of different bits of ephemera, so, and some of them related to royal visits. So she was invited to the Royal Garden Party at the Dunedin Botanic Garden.
Nice.
On Friday the 15th of February 1963. And so you get a letter, a memorandum for the persons invited to the Royal Garden Party. So she got one of these. And so here's just some of the little snippety bits from it. So the proper dress for the function is lounge suits for gentlemen and afternoon frocks and hats for ladies. Gloves are not necessary. If they are worn, they need not be white. If the day is wet, coats should be worn and umbrellas may be carried. So when Her Majesty...
Not put up, just carried.
Just carried. Just in case. So when Her Majesty the Queen arrives, one verse of the National Anthem will be played by the band located near the main gate. She will be met by His Worship the Mayor, introduced to members of the City Council, and will then proceed to walk around the gardens on the route, which will then be marked on the ground. Guests should line this route and be... And as Her Majesty passes, the gentlemen will bow and the ladies will curtsy.
Oh,
so you'll be ready to go.
Okay. Yeah, I'm queued up now.
Please do not remain silent while Her Majesty is walking through the gardens.
Oh, you've got to chat amongst yourselves.
Yeah.
It's like being in a play. Yeah. You have to pretend you're chatting.
Exactly. Yeah. So Her Majesty's route through the gardens is of adequate length to enable all guests to see her as she moves from the entrance to the Royal Pavilion. Mm. If guests are evenly spaced, they will not be more than two or three deep along each side of the route. Guests will not be permitted on the lawn in which the Royal Pavilion is located, but will all have the opportunity to see Her Majesty as she walks back to the car.
Oh, splendid.
The return route is along the path which runs from the Royal Pavilion to the main gate. Here again, guests must remain behind the line which is marked on the ground. Please applaud as Her Majesty passes. And it says, there are many large problems being faced in the organisation of this function, which will be without doubt the largest and most important social occasion in Dunedin for many years. We do sincerely hope that you can be present, and we do look forward to your cooperation in making this royal occasion an outstanding success.
How lovely.
It's for the mayor.
So yeah. the mayor invited Ada Fash.
He did.
Yeah. Who was the mayor?
I know. I was just thinking that that's signature. We may have to...
I don't know. We're not quite sure who the mayor was then.
But yeah. So it was J.C. Lucas was the town clerk at that stage.
Oh, good. He was probably the guy who organised it all, and the mayor enjoyed it.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's very, very regimented, isn't it? Everything has to be done a certain way, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then there was a royal concert that day as well.
Yeah.
And so there's a timetable when the different people had tickets in their different rows came in. So they had a particular time they had to come in. So it's fascinating.
It is amazing.
We'll be uploading this stuff on Scattered Seeds too.
Yes, you can have a look at that.
Yeah.
And Scattered Seeds is ...
dunedin.recollect.co.nz.
Indeed. Pop along there and enjoy that.
Yeah.
There's a few things on there about the Queen. Well, I think let's have a... This might have been played when the Queen was walking around the gardens. Who knows? This is the arrival of the Queen of Sheba. Thank you.
I love talking about theatre and you and people.
Because, you know, you're talking about Bessie Thompson, because she's come up quite a few times and it's like, oh, I need to come back and talk to you about her.
Well, you know, her partner was Letitia Lawson and she was my English teacher and Bessie was my speech teacher.
Oh.
And so the two of them both taught at Columba and they were spinsters of that generation where all the men disappeared, and a lot of those ladies lived together in partnerships with each other, and you wouldn't know.
No.
You know, is it our business anyway?
Exactly.
Exactly what the nature of their relationship was. But that was, they were quite a thing, those old spinsters, and I admired them very much. Columba College honoured me as one of their, in fact, the first lot they had in the arts, I think, distinguished alumni. Was it this year or last year? Best if I can remember, this year or last year. No, it must have been last year, because then all of the girls from my intake, 70, asked me if I would be the guest, their keynote speaker for a reunion of a whole weekend they had in Queenstown. Do you know half of them, so many of them have died, and some of them, at least five, by their own hand.
Oh,
and it gave me my theme thought I was talking about, really, the courage it takes just to live. And those old girls, who, fusty and old-fashioned as they were, taught us things. One of my old teachers, Mrs. Cicely Morrison there, for instance, telling us how she'd been great friends with a boy who was Māori when she was a little girl, and then her first dance with all her little Pākehā friends, white friends, and their frilly skirts and little cardi. There he was in a suit, and he came across and bowed and said, "May the best of dance." And her friends went, "The Māori!" And she said, "I was too embarrassed." And I said, "No, I didn't want to dance."
Oh,
said,
what a shame.
The look of hurt on his face
had
haunted her all those
years.
She had the courage to pass that story to us, never mind teaching us Latin and French, which she did quite competently. The important thing she did in our education was to tell us that story. And for me, at least, it resonated so that when I was a teacher, I would teach my kids the Pūtikawa tree and make them, Māori and Pākehā, look at the rejection that Roy gave Queenie. And because brown kids, I can't have brown kids. And tell them the story of Cicely and how wicked.
That's real life.
How wicked racist it is.
Gosh.
But there were some amazing old girls there, really, you know. Miss McKinnon, our history teacher, with her bald head and her wig perched everywhere.
Why is it always history teachers that have had one of those?
A lot of them lost their fiancés in the war. And a lot of them probably were lesbians and wanted to be with a lady anyway. Who knows? You know. But they were tough old girls, and they, for, as I said, very little money, mostly just being bullied by Miss Catherine A. Buchan, they came back to teach us. You know, the schools were desperate.
Did you have a favourite theatre to perform in? And what made that space that special?
I've performed in all of them, you see. I've performed in so many spaces in Dunedin. Allen Hall Theatre, of course, often. In fact, that's something I've recently been doing a lot more of, because the UNESCO City of Literature ran a short play festival, and I was in three plays there, which I loved. I absolutely loved working with the students again. I love working with young people. It's such fun. And you can pass on little snippets again to them, and you know, they're learning from you, but they are so refreshing and exciting and just fun to work with. I like the improvisers especially. They're all I reviewed Maria Colombo. You see, there's an example. I mean, you know, she's a Facebook friend of mine because I like the work she did and I wrote a good review of her. So the things complement each other,
yes.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But the university is now the nearest we've got to a professional theatre. They've got Marty there, Martin Roberts,
yes.
Who is absolutely wonderful. And, of course, Hilary Halber, mm-hmm. Who's running the place. And they're putting on things and teaching kids to a standard that is professional.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a very nice place to work because you know that you're going to have good lighting and everything is going to work well for you. The trouble with the Globe, and I love being on the stage at the Globe, is that it's got they haven't got quite enough good new blood coming in, but it's frustrating. The last play that I did at the Globe, I really designed the set and worked out the costumes and things. You know, you don't have that team behind you.
Mm.
I mean, Patrick and the other, I mean, Charmian Smith, who was did costumes and things at the Globe often. I mean, she's totally professional. She worked for television. She was costume wardrobe there when television was big in Dunedin. And then she worked at the Fortune as a wardrobe mistress. And she's somebody else who was a friend of mine, but whom I have nominated for theatre awards for costumes because they are the best, you know. Again, the Theatre Reviewers Collective that I'm part of with my wonderful colleagues Brenda Harwood and Barbara Frame in particular, but also Helen Watson White and Angela for a while, but she's having a baby at the moment. And it means it's a big commitment they have to see things, but we just felt as reviewers that we needed to be able to reward people. And that's been a good thing to do, but we didn't last year we did it a 2-year and we're going to do the same thing again, not have a ceremony this year but next, because there's not been enough and we don't want our standards to fall.
And
we don't want
it to be too easy to
get an award. And they don't know, how things are going. But each of these theatres is delightful to perform in, and the Globe is particularly charming to me, partly because it was one of my very first. But I love just looking up at that ceiling that Patrick constructed and everything.
Yeah.
It's a wonderful atmosphere to it. The Playhouse, again, I have sentimental feelings about, but I have to say that it's not a brilliant theatre in many ways, and I do hope they get the money to upgrade it, particularly for the seats, which are excruciatingly uncomfortable for anybody who's not sort of a wee mini person to fit into those seats all the time. I think COVID has done it a bit of a favour, and meaning at least people are spaced out a bit.
Yes.
But then they also have got a lot of trouble. I mean, poor Dylan doing the Mousetrap had to kind of scratch the set together himself for that, you know? And when we've got people who were doing things to the standard of the sets at the Fortune, it's really very sad.
Yeah.
The waste of there is talent here in Dunedin. If we could just get the money funneled so that they were being paid to do their thing, we'd be right. But Marty is fantastic at the university, and that means although it's still that same shabby old theatre that we were meant to have replaced in the 1960s, it is very adaptable and flexible, and they do some wonderful experimental things. And the Mayfair is a great atmosphere for certain productions, and I think musicals go awfully well.
Yes.
I put on a pantomime in the Mayfair with my kids from Queens when I had a principal who was very keen that people should see what you're doing, you know. So I've taken my kids up. Kanoa Lloyd, who's on Project, was my ratty when she was a wee thing that I did at the Globe Theatre.
She used to work at the library.
She did work at the library.
She briefly did, didn't she?
Yes.
She was my Hamlet. In fact, I got her the job as the... see, that's another connection, because it was Ross. And it was, you know, the people doing the TV thing there, they contacted me and said, and this is where Dunedin is good, because we know people and if we are encouraged to do it, we can help each other very much.
Mm-hmm.
And they sent me a thing saying we need some kids to front it, and I sent along 3 kids, and they said to me, oh, your girls were head and shoulders above the others, above the kids from other schools. So I'm just telling you guys, that's a bit boastful. But
you do know we're recording this.
Well, just don't you keep this forever. But they chose Kanoa, but they said if they hadn't taken her, the next one they would have taken was my Megan Woodley Higgins, who was also, you know, would have been a lovely presenter as well for a kids' TV show. They were all great. But the Mayfair, I did the pantomime, and it was just such a deuce bad luck. It was right at the moment where teachers were having a strike.
Oh.
And they decided that they would do an old-fashioned thing of withdrawing goodwill, which meant no taking
right.
sports
no
teams or drama clubs.
Yeah. Yeah.
And of course, I mean, that's all very well, but really the time for that had gone. It was a subject. I was grading these kids on how well they do perform.
That's right. Mm. It's not extracurricular, it's curricular.
And it was in the Mayfair. I mean, we'd already paid out $1,000 to hire the Mayfair. I mean, and that was money we didn't have. We had to, we just didn't have the money.
Mm.
My kids had worked all the way through the holidays on it. They said I could be there for the first performance, but not the other two. I couldn't leave my kids alone. As I said to you, the Mayfair is if there was a fire, down underneath there,
right.
you'd be running around like a rat in a trap. You wouldn't be able to get out. I couldn't leave my kids on their own there. But it was very difficult. I had to, in the end, resign from PPTA, and I'm a good union girl. I really am. I felt bad about that. Do the play and then later rejoin. And I remember Jane Smith on the ODT getting into a bit of trouble writing too sympathetic a letter for me, an article on me for that. Mm. And she was told, and she's now a friend of mine in the Regency dance group.
Yeah.
You know, again, Dunedin, you can send a lady around to people again. Don't make an enemy of anyone. I say this to my kids. I say, listen, New Zealand is a small place.
Yes.
You are making your reputation now.
Mm. Yeah.
People will remember. I will be writing references for you as I am in 20 years' time still.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm not the only one. There are everybody that you come in contact in the theatre world, they will remember.
Mm. Of course they will.
And they pass on to their friends in the theatre world. And
that's right.
Here you go.
What about productions? Did you ever have a favourite?
The Regent's
so
nice too, you know. We've done stuff in the Regent. Sorry, I haven't sort of... I'm still going with all the theatres. I've performed in so many spaces and lots of outdoor ones and lots of site-specific things, and it's a real bugger. I mean, Jocelyn and I have done some Jane Austen things in the library, and we've done some in, for instance, the Savoy, and the acoustics in the Savoy are so hard. It's so difficult.
Well, it's not a theatre.
And now we're performing in Alderston.
Mm. Fantastic.
And that's
great.
Yeah. And they're lovely people there, and they have been very supportive and helping.
So when is that? The end of August?
And then we've done other site-specific things, like Jonathan Quirth, who does wonderful things, very imaginative.
Yes.
When we did A Murder in the Cathedral, we worked all the different areas. And I was standing on those steps in the octagon in the cathedral, crying out my lines as the leader of the chorus there, from, you know, sort of clear the air, and I was having to compete with Jingle Bells from down in the octagon because it was the Christmas parade coming in. I like site-specific stuff, but it is difficult.
Yeah.
I mean, that last Midsummer Night's Dream I reviewed up in the gardens, it was annoying if there was a lorry thundering past on something. But, you know, we haven't got the absolute perfect place.
We didn't have lorries in time of Shakespeare, did they?
But they did it so much.
We didn't have to compete with it.
Yeah. And things, you know, I've worked in the Regent, and I can throw my voice in and I can get to the back, but it's hard work, and I don't blame them for being Mike now. But these things come and go. There's not an absolute perfect theatre space, but sometimes they are just right for the play that you're doing. That last one I did at
the
Globe
worked. Yeah, do we have a purpose-built theatre? Not all plays are not the same. Mm. So, you need something adaptable, don't you?
But you think about London, where they have kind of places like both the Barbican and the National, have got three theatres.
That's right.
You know, you've got a big open thing like a Greek theatre, you've got a conventional Victorian-style theatre, and you've got a little black box that'll work for flexible sorts of things.
Mm, that's what we need.
Mm. Interactive.
So you've got your options.
Yeah, it all works. Mm. I mean, we're having great fun with the Alveston thing. We're planning it so that the people are going to be able to tiptoe upstairs and peep into one of the bedrooms and see Jane and Cassandra Austen puttering around getting ready for bed, and then they'll be
wonderful.
Taken downstairs, listening to music and drinking their champagne and so forth. Well, and then, you know, and Jane's going to run down and fling herself sobbing on a headlong and say, oh my gosh, have I done right to accept the proposal of young Mr. Harris Big Wither?
That's so immersive, isn't it? I love it.
Yeah, that's very fun. But as I said, I don't think they have yet got a place that would be perfect for everyone. Mm. You just have to actually choose your spot. And that's where, again, if we had sort of a committee, if Stage South can be large to the point where it has power and can control things like this to say, right, now everybody who wants to put on a play this year in Dunedin, come and tell us about it, and we'll work out what are the best venues for your particular sort of production, and what is the best time of year, so that you're not treading on each other's toes. Absolutely. And I mean, after all, to a certain extent, that's what the Fringe Theatre Festival does. See, that's an old pupil of
except
mine.
It only
Gareth
has a three-week window, doesn't it?
So, he's lovely. Yeah. Gareth's lovely. Yeah. And he's got a good team working there. And Katrina Thompson and people have done all sorts of things. And, I mean, I remember Katrina seeing something that she did in a car park at the back of...
And Dowling Street, isn't it?
There's all sorts of interesting things that people have done in places where...
Necessity is the mother of invention.
Well,
they
that's
say.
True. But we still should have a professional.
We definitely should.
Back to that again.
Especially
were there any other questions on there?
Well, we asked about your favourite play. Is there one production that really says that, you know, your moment?
People do remember me in Masterclass. That was the one with, you know, standing ovations and the fortune, and it was such a wonderful role. Chap came from America and saw me in that, and came back afterwards. I wanted to tell you that the woman who played it in America won the, what was the name of their American Theatre Awards, you know, like their
Tonys.
I think it was, I think it was, unless that was for the musicals, in which case we're completely wrong. But anyway, won an award on Broadway, whatever, he said, and I thought that it was, that she was such a wonderful performer, but now I've seen you, and I waited for him to say, you're just as good an actor. He didn't say that, unfortunately. What he said was, I see now, it was the role. Well, that was near enough the same. And it was, it's a wonderful part. It was a wonderful part. But Campbell Thomas, who was the director for that, and he was the director of the theatre at the time, he said that was the production that he was one of, I think it was the one, possibly one of the ones that he was most satisfied with in his time as an artistic director. Things came together very well on it, you know.
Where
it was in the fortune. That was in their Methodist Mission Church fortune. And it was lovely doing that, it really was. And that was on the main stage. And, but it was a very hard part because I had to come on and have a long speech to the audience with them lit up.
so you could address them
and talk to them. And I was talking for two pages and being quite critical of them. You know, you don't have a look. Get one immediately. You know, she's picking me up. I believe they formed a sort of support group for people that I'd picked on, you know. But no, that was lovely. And so I suppose that's a part that I remember. But there are other parts that mean a lot to me, like playing the one dying of cancer after I'd been going through cancer myself, and feeling I was doing it as a gesture to help, you know, to feel something that I feel passionately about. But then so many of the plays that I've been in are things that are causes that are really dear to my heart.
You wouldn't have done them otherwise.
Yeah, well, this is it. And as I said, I've had the luxury.
Yeah,
I've been able to pick and choose, and there are things I've turned down. I've turned down roles where, even in wonderful plays, and I still wonder, there was one I turned down, for instance, which was The Changeling. She's such an, I mean, it's a classic, and it's a wonderful, wonderful part, Joanna Beatrice, but she's such a horrible, horrible person, and I just didn't feel like, I mean, I've found the way to be Lady Macbeth. I found the way to be Medea. Now, Medea was a wonderful role, and come through to actually murdering my own children. I could find something in them that I could identify with and like enough to be able to want to be them and bring their character to life on stage. But there's been one or two characters that I've just thought, I don't think I want to be that person. You're not very easy to live with when you're playing certain roles, I have to say. It's a good thing that I'm living on my own now.
do you method it?
I have lived with at different times have found me almost unbearable if I've been playing a part where I've been very autocratic. And those are the parts, as I said, I tend to play high status characters. You know, people think of me, you know, think of Queen Elizabeth, they think of me.
Yeah.
Ross said, you know, that was a part you were born to play, for Queen Elizabeth I, and I must say that was...
So the characters, there's some characters you just can't shake. Like they're with you that whole time you're performing.
Yeah. You come home, you know, you're used to on stage for hours in rehearsal and everything. You look at somebody and they wither, and you tend to carry that on to your
own. You probably quite enjoy the
Do you know who you are speaking to? You know, you feel like saying in real life, don't you?
But you do draw on something inside you for every part, don't you?
I think you really do. Some of them, like, she was my wonderful stage manager for the Pink Hammer. The Pink Hammer was written by one of my pupils, Michelle Ames, who was really lovely. And because she died, wanted to put it on as a tribute to her, but also it was a very good play. And I had a wonderful cast. But again, they were often people that I'd been able to go and shoulder tap. They hadn't just rolled up to an audition. Mm. And again, that's wonderful about Dunedin, that I can go to people and say, please, please, please. And that worked really well. And I do the same thing. I've had, dear Dylan, who directed The Mousetrap, said, I felt it was a real coup to get you for playing the murder victim. Oh, that's so sweet. That's so nice. It's just me. But, you know, they need somebody to be, like I'm saying, that elder.
Yeah.
That come out of forget because it just needs it. So I just have to try and live up to it desperately, frantically.
Well, you just bring that Lana with you, don't you?
Well, I don't know that I do, but I try because they need it. Not because I need it. In fact, get very embarrassed occasionally by some of the things and some of the honours I've got. It's been very nice. But, I'm like, shit, there's other people who deserve this quite as much, if not a great deal more than I do. But, like I say, they need somebody to be there. Mm. So that's what you do. Mm. The last play, for instance, The Noel Coward, you see, now that was a friend of mine, Chris Manley, who used to teach drama at Kavanagh. Yeah. And also worked at Toitū as well, and they do wonderful theatre things there. But I used to take my kids along and get them to devise works based on something interesting in the museum and our history, our own Dunedin past. I like that very nice little performance I've just seen there at Toitū with, again, somebody I worked with in the old days, Nadia Shaw-Bennett, and I think Cindy Diver might have been directing it. It was wonderful to be able to, in the Theatre Awards, reward people like Cindy and her group. And Sarah Georgie in that, she was one of my pupils. She was one of my leads in The Gut Girls. She was a great reactor. And Mark Nielsen was, I loved being in Chekhov's The Seagull at the Globe. Yes. And Mark Nielsen played my lover, Trigorin. Oh, he was beautiful to play with. Lovely cast. And I've had people that I've worked with at the Globe, it's been a great pleasure and privilege. People like David Corbellis, he hasn't done anything for a while in theatre because he's very involved with the Art Society, but he and I had quite a run at the Globe doing restoration theatre. We did all of the great restoration plays, and I've got loads of photos I'd love to show you of those, but it meant that I could teach restoration theatre skills to those young casts coming on, and David and I understood each other and worked very well together. And I'd be in the play, but giving them workshops on movement and how to bow and curtsy and use a fan, really. Things like that would work. It's great to see theatre in Dunedin as a living, growing creature with all the young ones coming on. And I love to be teaching the next lot and then to see them take over. And do you know, some of Kimberly Buchan's kids came and thanked me for teaching her drama so that they would have her as a teacher. Now, how lovely is that? It just is so sweet. I get very excited. In fact, the Columba kids, after I'd spoken as the alumni there, and I mean, I was only 5 years at Columba, I was nearly 50 at Queen's as a teacher, so really my loyalties go to Queen's. But the Columba girls were kind of inspired by the speech that I gave when they gave me an award for being a distinguished ex-student, and they said, would I give them a hand with their Shakespeare for the... And they got up to Wellington. I was so chuffed for them. And the little lass that was being the director that I helped, I loved going and working with them again. The only thing is that I worry dreadfully that I get excited and the theatre part of me takes over from the teacher and I will say something desperately inappropriate. I mean, they're working with the kids. I'm saying, look, for goodness sake, if you've decided you're going to set this in a nightclub and have all these hostesses going around and everything, then you've got to do it. You've got to do it properly. You girl, when you get over to there and you start slithering around him, you're trying to give him an erection. I thought, oh my God, what I said. All these nice little girls, you know. The theatre side of me is taking over from the teacher yet again. So I had to watch that one. But no, I love working with them. Yeah. And, you know, it's such a delight to see them spark from something you said and then fly with it. Yeah. And, you know, you're left on the ground. You just watch them and wave them off.
Mm. You've lit the spark. Well, the only other question I have for you was really your honours. 2019, you were appointed a member of the New Zealand Order of Merit.
Yes.
For services to theatre and education. How do you think that recognition helps to advance the work of actors and the support theatre receives as an art form? Discuss. Feels like an exam
it's
question.
It's a very easy one to answer because I have written so many letters of support, testimonials, references for people that I have taught or people that I have worked with in the theatre. The very last one was Gareth McMillan for the Fringe Festival asking would I put a support thing in for him. And the fact that I can write MNZM after my name gives me a credibility.
Yes.
And that means that I can throw the weight of I have been recognised by the country in the areas of theatre and education. Therefore, my opinion of this person's work is to be trusted.
Mm.
So I have to be careful that I'm not saying anything that isn't absolutely true, all right? But it does make a difference, I think.
Mm.
And I'm very, very appreciative of the people who put my name forward for giving me the ability to help other people in that way. That's where it matters. That's where it matters. But it was also fun going up there and having a nice afternoon tea and getting a little gong pinned on me. And
And that is very typical of you that you will use that to help others.
I can't see much value in it otherwise. I was very delighted that my brother got one the year after me for his work for the environment.
Fantastic.
But you see, that's for real stuff. I admire my brother enormously for doing things for the good of the earth, where so much of my life, to be honest, has been just for my joy and delight and pleasure, because
joy and
performing
and
teaching
is
such
essential for us as human beings.
Well, I think they are too, but I've done it. So, I mean, I have enjoyed the things I've done so much.
Yeah.
Even when I'm busy writing reviews until 2 a.m, thinking, why do I do this? Nobody's paying me. I'm enjoying it, really. Yeah. It's very satisfying. And so when I see somebody like my brother get an award for real work, I feel slightly embarrassed that I should be rewarded for having had such a gorgeous life.
I just think, you know, being able to inspire those people, you know, I just think that's so important, the lives that you have changed and, you know, just the emotion that comes out today, you know, just how special.
You told us stories before we pressed record that really touched our hearts. Mm. Things you've done.
If you want,
you've changed lives.
Well, that's very sweet of you.
And I just think, you know, walking in here because I hadn't met you before, and I just that magic of it coming into your house and just thinking, I love this person. Yeah. No wonder you're so inspirational because you're just so much fun.
I just love an audience. It's
happy
so nice to
audience.
Have you two. It's been an absolute delight speaking with you. You're such charming women, both of you, and it's just been such fun. Plus, that was really nice food you brought. Do get some more of it.
And that was the wonderful Terry McTavish. It was so wonderful being able to talk to Dunedin's very own Queen of Theatre.
She really is amazing, isn't she?
Such a character, such a wonderful raconteur. Could have spent days with her. Hopefully we'll get another chance to go and talk to her again.
So generous with her time.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so thank you so much, Terry. We really loved spending time with you and having a chat. Right. Shall we have some music now?
Yeah. What about Hallelujah by Stan Walker?
Oh, I like that one.
I heard there was a secret chord that David played, and it plays the Lord. You don't really care for music, do you? Well, it goes like this: the fourth, the fifth, the minor fall, the major league.
triumphal King composing hallelujah, 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 hallelujah. I heard
beautiful.
I know, he's such a beautiful voice. It's so high.
Yes. I've got a newfound appreciation for Stan Walker now.
Yeah.
Goodness me.
New Zealand's own Stan Walker. Yeah.
I'm feeling quite zen.
Mm.
Yeah. Right. Wake us up.
Right. So, I decided to have a look at some other well-known Dunedinites, and I suddenly thought, well, who was MacKendrew Bay named after? And so I did some research, and I found about James MacKendrew, who MacKendrew Bay was named after. So he was born in 1820. So he arrived in Dunedin in early 1851 with his wife Eliza, their infant son Colin, and their brother-in-law W.H. Reynolds on the schooner Titan. So he went into business with his brother-in-law. So MacKendrew had trained in commerce in London and Aberdeen, and they set up in competition with Johnny Jones as a merchant. So he was also instrumental in launching both the Otago Witness and the Colonist newspapers.
Yeah, fantastic.
And active in politics. So he was elected first to the Provincial Council in 1853. And to the House of Representatives in 1854. And the partnership with his brother-in-law was dissolved in 1858, and he began taking risks with his enthusiasm to speed Otago's development up. So he purchased a steamship called Queen in 1858.
This gets more and more appropriate as we talk.
Doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yes. And so to trade up and down the coast, he exported grain to Melbourne. The first load of wool to go directly from Otago to London was set later that year, and soon afterwards two other ships were added to his fleet. So in 1860, after the retirement of Cargill, MacKendrew was elected as the second provincial superintendent. But unfortunately, there was a bit of a scandal. So the debts incurred mainly from the purchase of the Queen led to his imprisonment in 1861. This embarrassing situation became even more scandalous when, as superintendent, he proclaimed his own home, Carisbrook, to be a debtor's prison so he could serve.
So he stayed at home.
Exactly, home detention. So, yeah. But after that, he stood for superintendency in 1861, and he lost to John Richardson, But after being in seclusion for 2 years, he returned to the Provincial Council in 1863 and to the House of Representatives in 1865 and was re-elected superintendent in 1867. Yeah, and remaining there until they were abolished. Yeah. So
colourful character.
Very colourful character, yeah. So so they lost, you know, their house, Carers Brook, after the bankruptcy, and they lived in Collingswood in McAndrew Bay, until Eliza died in 1875, and then James was badly injured in a carriage accident outside his home in 1887 and died soon after. Yeah, and it says and on the Toitū website, it said he was widely mourned for all his faults. He had always had Otago's interests at heart.
Well, you've got to take risks, I suppose.
Well, you
do. Speculate to accumulate.
Yeah. So his bust occupies the pride of place outside the Toitū.
Oh, right.
Yeah. So when next time you walk past...
Yes, I have seen a bust outside.
Exactly.
Toitū, now I come to think of it.
Yeah. So that's James McAndrew.
And didn't you tell me he had a moniker? He was known as...
Oh, yes. Well, it says Otago's tribal chieftain, Eric Olsen, described him as. And what was the other one? The uncrowned king of Dunedin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there you go. We have an uncrowned king.
Exactly. Yeah.
Fancy that. Oh, well, I'm going to talk about some more royal traditions, if that's all right. These are even more silly than the others. Very odd rules and traditions in the royal family. I don't know if these will change now we have a new king, but these were kind of instigated prior to the loss of Queen Elizabeth II. I can't confirm or deny these, but I found them on the American news channel CBS, so they must be true.
Well, exactly, yes.
Apparently, everyone in the royal family gets weighed before and after Christmas dinner.
Ah!
Yep, I have no
that
idea.
That came up in
this is why I don't go
recently.
To Christmas dinner at Buckingham Palace. Did it come up in a movie?
It did, in Spencer, that movie about Princess Diana. They did that, and
yes,
I always
that's
thought...
Right, that's right, that's
really?
Right. Really? Yeah. Yeah.
Oh,
apparently
true.
So. That's one of the most bizarre traditions. Requires each member of the royal family to get weighed both before and after Christmas dinner, because if they gain weight, it signals that they truly enjoyed themselves at the table.
Well, I suppose.
According to a 2018 Grazia Daily article, the bizarre ritual dates back to King Edward VII, Queen Elizabeth's great-grandfather, who wanted to ensure his guests ate well.
Oh, I suppose.
So I don't think he was trying to embarrass them. He just wanted to make sure they ate.
Yeah.
Yes. So I definitely wouldn't be eating there.
The pressure's on.
No. Another one is, apparently, you're not allowed to play Monopoly in the royal family.
Why not?
Well, apparently. Yeah. Probably the silliest and least strictly enforced rule on the list, but Queen Elizabeth reportedly banned the royals from playing the board game Monopoly. The reason for this is that the game made the family a little too competitive.
Oh.
So it's like a lot of families. I won't play Monopoly with my son, for example, for the very
really?
Same reason. Yes.
Oh.
In 2008, Prince Andrew was gifted a Monopoly board after attending a meeting with Leeds Building Society, which is a financial institution in England. The Duke of York reportedly turned down the gift, saying, "We're not allowed to play Monopoly at home," before clarifying that the family tries to play the game. "It gets too vicious."
Oh, wow.
Yes, that was my impression of Prince Andrew. Another thing is that, of course, well, you probably expected this, I don't know, royals are not allowed to vote. The royals are expected to remain politically neutral at all times. This includes refraining from voting in elections. While their voting is not strictly illegal, the UK Parliament's website does say it is considered unconstitutional for the monarch to vote in an election.
I suppose
it's a bit of favouritism, really.
Exactly,
isn't
yeah.
Yes. The king has to give you written approval before you can get married. Written approval. Yeah. So according to the Succession to the Crown Act of 2013, the first six people in line for the crown cannot marry without the consent of the reigning monarch. Failure to do so would immediately disqualify them and their descendants from ever ascending to the throne.
Wow.
Yeah, there you go. Apparently black can only be worn at funerals.
Ah.
They're not allowed to wear black any other time.
Now I'm thinking, have I ever seen anyone in black at other
times? Think, oh, well,
I will.
Princess Diana did wear black.
Oh, that black.
Scandalous.
That black dress, yes.
Scandalous.
Yeah, yeah.
But they, as I mentioned earlier, they have to pack a black outfit every time they travel. Though they are discouraged from wearing black in public, it is protocol that the royals have to pack a black outfit, which I've told you before. The rule is thought to have arisen out of Queen Elizabeth's personal experience of hearing the news that her father, King George IV, died when he was travelling in Africa, and she didn't have any mourning attire with her. She knew a plane would be swarmed by photographers when she arrived back in the UK, so she had to send an aide to fetch an appropriate outfit. for her before she disembarks. She's very practical.
I was going to say, there's a lot to think about at those times, isn't there?
Well, yes. But, yeah, she always learns from things. And, yeah. Or learned. Here's another one. You shouldn't eat shellfish at restaurants. This is true for anyone, really. Yeah. Sorry to the shellfish industry. There are a few protocols centred around what royals can and cannot eat at restaurants, but the biggest menu no-no is shellfish. The reason is shellfish poses a higher risk of food poisoning than most other foods, and the family needs to always remain in good health. And for that same reason, the family is also advised against ordering meat cooked rare, drinking tap water in foreign countries, and eating food that is overly spicy.
What a doesn't boring menu. About.
Doesn't, does it really? No, I'm not even going to go there. There is a rule against wearing fur, which you might expect. Yes. This rule goes, but it's not a recent thing. This rule goes back 685 years.
Whoa.
Yeah, I know, weird. When King Edward III passed the Fur Act of 1337. The act effectively banned everyone except for knights and clergymen from wearing fur as part of their outfits.
That's so interesting.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
But the Queen actually apparently did wear fur, but she would wear fake fur, not real fur. So that's all right. There's a lipstick etiquette too. Royals wearing lipstick must always try to drink from the same spot. This is something we can all learn from. The same spot on their cup so as not to smear their makeup on the glass any more than absolutely necessary. And that is a rule,
that
apparently.
Is
I can imagine this all written down so and practical. You give it to the new members of the family. Just read this and learn. You're not allowed to sleep when the Queen is awake, apparently. No one can retire for the night until it will be His Majesty who does so first. So let's hope he doesn't stay up all night. Yeah. The king can drive without a licence, apparently.
Oh,
that's The monarch's the only person in the UK who doesn't need a driver's licence to get behind the wheel of a car and also never had to take a driving test. Yeah.
So chances of them taking a car and driving around are probably fairly slim,
well,
I would imagine.
Fairly that's slim, but fun. Who knows? There you go. So that's it, really. I cannot go on because we're running out of time. We probably want to have another song, I would have thought. Don't forget to tune in next week. You can tune in. We start the show at 11 o'clock prompt.
We certainly do.
On Monday mornings, 105.4 FM, 1575 AM. And you can listen again on Tuesday evenings at 10. And also you can download the podcast and have a listen at your leisure on oar.org.nz. That's me.
That is.
Right. Shall we have one more song? This is called The Last Farewell. This is for the Queen to say goodbye one more time. This
and thank you.
Yes, and thank you. That's a good point. Thank you for everything, Your Majesty. This is The Last Farewell by Roger Whittaker. Enjoy this one.
The ship lies rigged and ready in the harbor. Tomorrow for old England, she sails. Far away from your land of endless sunshine, to my land full of rainy skies and gales. And I shall be aboard that ship tomorrow, though my heart is full of tears at this farewell. For you are beautiful, and I have loved you dear, more dearly than the spoken word can tell. For you are beautiful, and I have loved you dear, more dearly than the spoken word can tell. I heard there's a wicked war ablaze, and the taste of war I know so very well. Even now I see the foreign flag arise, their guns on fire as we sail into hell. I have no fear of death, it brings no sorrow, but how bitter will be this last farewell.
For you are beautiful, and I have loved you dearly, more dearly than a spoken word can tell. For you are beautiful, and I have loved you dearly, more dearly than a spoken word can tell. Death and darkness gather all about me, and my ship be torn apart upon the sea. I shall smell again the fragrance of these eyes in the heaving waves that brought me once to thee. And should I return safe home again to England, I shall watch the English mist roll through the dell. For you are beautiful, and I have loved you dearly, more dearly than the spoken word can tell. For you are beautiful, and I have loved you dearly, more dearly than the spoken word can tell.
Recollections Radio. Monday morning tea time is now all about sharing memories with you, old and new, of life in Dunedin.
Bringing you stories, interviews and music from times past and inviting you to share your memories with us.
Presented by Jill Bowie and Kay Mercer, the team behind Dunedin Public Library's Scattered Seeds Archive. Thanks to generous funding by the New Zealand Libraries Partnership Project.
Recollections Radio, Monday mornings at 11 on 105.4 FM and 1575 AM.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.